I know we all want emergency medicine to be exciting. We want to be able to boast to our friends about great saves. We want to talk to our colleagues about the big-time procedures, Reboa, awake intubation, resuscitative hysterotomy.
Resuscitative hysterotomy.
But sometimes we need to examine the practices that we just take for granted, the things that we do without even thinking, because these common, everyday practices ultimately are going to have a bigger impact on the lives of our patients than that once-in-a-career cut to the front of a neck.
That's the voice of Justin Morgenstern, Canadian-trained emergency physician, now transplanted in New Zealand, the creator and author of First 10 EM, and he's got a little to say on stress testing, something that we order all the time.
Justin Morgenstern.
Justin Morgenstern.
Why do we order stress tests? Or maybe I'll phrase that another way. Today I'm going to explain why I have not ordered a stress test in at least the last 5 years. Now, that may sound pretty drastic to some people, and honestly, some people will work in systems where my approach is going to be too drastic for now. But bear with me, because even if you're not going to stop ordering stress tests tomorrow, there's a bunch of pearls hidden in the evidence around stress tests that will help you make better decisions for your chest pain patients. To understand why I don't order stress tests, we have to tackle three big areas of research.
One,
we have to know our pre-test probability. That is, once we're done our chest pain workup in the ED, how many of our patients actually go on to have an MI?
Two,
we have to think about what we're going to do with the results of the test, which when we're talking about stress testing means we need to know who benefits from invasive testing and treatment, which chest pain patients need PCI.
Three,
finally, we probably need to know a little bit about the accuracy of the test itself and whether there are any studies that show it actually helps. So let's really quickly dive into the evidence for those three questions. Now, these are huge topics. So if you want to go into more detail, there is a full write-up and all the references on the First 10 EM website.
One, pretest probability.
Pretest probability, or how often do we miss MI? And the number you're likely to hear is 1 to 2%. That's what I was told in residency. That's what I hear at all the conferences. But when you actually read the literature, a completely different number emerges. The classic study that is quoted for that 2% is Pope 2000 in the New England Journal, and they conclude right in the abstract that we mistakenly sent home or missed 2.1% of MI patients. But if you actually read the study, it turns out that they worked up 10,689 chest pain patients in the emergency department and ended up sending home 19 who later had an MI. 19 out of 10,000. That's 0.2%, or about 2 in 1,000. Now, there were a few other patients who had unstable angina. That's a tricky diagnosis because it's entirely subjective. But even if we include them, our miss rate is about 4 in 1,000. So 2 to 4 in 1,000, not 2%. And I'll tell you what, that 2 in 1,000 number is incredibly consistent across the literature. For example, FOI 2015 looked at 420,000 emergency department chest pain patients, and there were only 400 who were discharged and later came back with an MI in the next week. That's 1 in 1,000. And even if you look all the way out to 6 months, there are still only 3 in 1,000 who came back with an MI. And in some settings, that number may even be lower. Napoli 2014 looked at 3,500 patients admitted to a chest pain observation unit, and there were 0 deaths and 0 MIs in the follow-up period. 0%. And yet all these patients were admitted to the hospital. Now, you'll see some higher numbers reported somewhere. For example, if you look at the heart score studies, you're going to see numbers reported between 0.5 and 3%. But it's really important to realize that those studies aren't looking at just MI and death. They're looking at this composite called MACE, which includes revascularization. If you actually just look at MI, the number of misses is about 2 or maybe 3 in 1,000. But if the patient never had an MI, did they really need a revascularization? Why did they put the stent in? Maybe it wasn't necessary.
Two, results of positive stress test.
Which brings us to our second question. What should we do with the results of a stress test? Or more specifically, what do we do with a positive stress test? Do these patients need an angiogram or a stent? Now, before we talk about the stress test patients, the ones with negative troponins and normal ECGs, let's take a quick look at the stenting in the sicker patients. Stenting clearly saves lives in STEMI patients. But what about NSTEMI patients and patients with unstable angina? Well, if you look at the Cochrane Review for Routine Invasive Management of NSTEMI and Unstable Angina, you will see that mortality is not changed. Outside of STEMI, stenting does not save lives. When we send NSTEMI patients for CAS, the benefit is a small decrease in minor or non-fatal MIs. And this is really important to know. If stenting does not save lives in patients with positive troponins, pretty unlikely that we're going to save a life with stress testing. Now, I think it's important to throw a caveat in there. There are definitely STEMI equivalents out there that don't have ST elevation but need to go to the cath lab. And Emomatu has covered these things before. Wellens, DeWinters, diffuse ST depression with ST elevation and AVR. There are definitely situations with coronary occlusion without ST elevation, and they need to go to the cath lab. But for the most part, the benefit of routine invasive management in NSTEMI patients is very small. But of course, these aren't the patients that we're sending for stress testing. These are patients with positive troponins. So why am I even talking about this? Well, this is the absolute best possible outcome from stress testing. If we just happen to catch somebody who's have an NSTEMI, whose trope would have been positive tomorrow, and get them to invasive management, you won't have saved their life. In the best case scenario, you might have decreased their chance for having a future non-fatal MI. But what about invasive management in patients with negative troponins and normal ECGs, the patients that we actually send for stress testing? Well, if you look at Sturgiopoulos 2012, a big meta-analysis on this topic, you will find that invasive management in these low-risk patients leads to no difference. No difference in mortality, no difference in MI, no difference in unplanned revascularization, no difference in persistent angina, no difference. So if you send a patient for a stress test, and it's positive, and because of that, you send them to get invasive management, you will not have helped the patient, because these low-risk patients do not benefit from invasive management. Now, before we leave this topic, there is one other study that everybody needs to know about, because you'll frequently hear your cardiologist say, yeah, we know invasive management doesn't save lives or prevent MIs, but these patients are having pain. We're putting these stents in to reduce anginal symptoms. And there were some older studies that suggested that stents might decrease pain, but they were fundamentally flawed because they were unblinded. The patients and the doctors knew that they'd gotten a stent, and we know that pain is extremely susceptible to the placebo effect. And that's why the Orbita study is so important. It's the only double-blind study on the topic, and it was conclusively negative. Stents do not improve chest pain, angina, exercise tolerance, or quality of life. So let's recap. After a normal ED assessment, our patients are actually very low risk. For every 1,000 chest pain patients we see in the ED, only about 2 will have an MI in the 30 days or so after we see them. So our pre-test probability for the stress test, the chance that it could possibly help us pick up one of those few misses, is very low. And then we know that if the test is positive, there doesn't seem to be much to do with the results, because sending these patients for invasive management does not help them. So we could probably stop there. We have a test that isn't going to change our management, and we are applying it to a population with a tiny pretest probability. You don't need a degree in statistics to see that even if the stress tests were incredibly accurate, this can't possibly work. But I'll tell you what, stress tests are definitely not incredibly accurate.
3. Accuracy.
Now, the accuracy of stress testing becomes a little bit complicated because we actually use it to assess multiple things. What we really care about in the emergency department is this patient going to die or have an MI in the short term? We use stress testing to protect our patients and honestly ourselves from those bad outcomes. And there are a bunch of observational studies that look at stress testing after ED workups. I won't go through them all because the results are all really similar. But let's look at one just to get a sense of stress testing. Mayer 2006 in the Annals of Emergency Medicine, they looked at 7,000 ED chest pain patients and ultimately had 900 who had negative workups and were discharged to have an outpatient stress test. Nobody died. There were 3 MIs, and only one of those MIs was in the first month after discharge. So once again, we see that 1 to 3 in 1,000 miss rate. All 3 MIs had negative stress tests. The negative stress test missed all of them. That's a sensitivity of 0%. On the other hand, there were 150 people who had abnormal or positive stress tests. Of those, 122 later had confirmatory testing of no coronary artery disease. So 80% of the positive tests were false positive. And it's not clear that the 20% true positives had any benefit from the test. There were 10 stents placed, but these were in patients with negative troponins and normal ECGs, so they probably weren't helpful. In fact, the stress test is probably causing unnecessary invasive interventions. And that's basically what all of the stress testing literature looks like. It doesn't seem to catch people who have MIs. The sensitivity is close to 0%. And the vast majority of positive stress tests are false positives. And even the true positives don't seem to result in clear patient benefit. Now that's only looking at short-term death and MI, and that's what matters most to me in the emergency department. But maybe you want to find coronary artery disease to guide medical management and prevent long-term outcomes. And that's reasonable. I might argue that it's more of a primary care job than an emergency job, but let's assume that we want to find CAD. Can stress tests find it? And I think the answer is pretty clear, no. You'll see a lot of different numbers out there. A lot of studies are pretty biased because not everybody gets the same gold standard. But if you look at Froelich in 1998, every patient got both an exercise stress test and an angiogram. And looking for coronary artery disease, an exercise stress test has a sensitivity of 45% and a specificity of 85%. That's bad. If I hadn't convinced you already, those numbers should be the death of exercise stress testing. Now, of course, it gets even more complicated because there's all kinds of different stress tests out there. So maybe stress echo or nuclear stress testing is more accurate. And they probably are. The best studies, the ones where everybody had the same gold standard, everybody got an angiogram, show that these other stress tests probably have both a sensitivity and a specificity around 80%. So that is somewhat better, but it still isn't good enough. It's not a strong enough test to either rule in or rule out disease. And if you're applying those numbers to extremely low-risk patients, like the ones who've had a negative ED workup, that 2 in 1,000 risk, the result is so many more false positives than true positives, the result just can't help us. And how can I be sure of that? Well, we don't have huge RCTs, but there are actually a few stress testing RCTs out there. There are two that looked at emergency department patients. LIM 2013 looked at 1,500 ED patients who had both had normal ECGs and negative biomarkers, and they randomized them to either get a nuclear stress test or just a clinical assessment based on risk factors. And then Frizzoli looked at 105 low-risk ED chest pain patients after 2 negative troponins and a low-risk CAR score, and they randomized them either to be immediately discharged from hospital or to be admitted for a stress test. And in both these trials, there was no difference. The stress test did not help. The only difference was higher costs and longer admissions in the stress test group. And there are a few other stress test RCTs, both in the primary care setting and high-risk patients before having vascular surgery, and they're all the same. Stress testing does not result in benefit for patients. So stress testing is inaccurate. We use it on low-risk patients, and we don't know what to do with the results. All this data suggests that it couldn't possibly help our patients, and the RCTs confirm it doesn't help our patients. So what should we actually do? Well, I told you right at the beginning, I never order stress tests. Our patients are so low risk. If they have negative troponins and normal ECGs, I am discharging almost 100% of these patients. And I'm not even sending them to cardiology. Most of the time, these patients are just going back to see their family doctor. Now, we do need to be careful. There is the rare patient who has the perfect story or is so extremely high risk, they need to stick around for the third troponin or some more ECGs. So yes, I will occasionally admit a patient with a negative workup, but I mean occasionally. This is happening maybe once or twice a year. So does this mean that the stress test is dead? Well, think about it this way. What do these patients need after their negative ED workup? Well, all these patients need risk factor modification. No matter who you are, you should get counseling about diet, exercise, smoking. All patients need to have their blood pressure, their cholesterol, their diabetes looked at. Stress testing doesn't help with that because that's just good quality care for everybody. And we've already said these patients with negative troponins and normal ECGs don't need invasive management. So stress testing doesn't help us with that decision either. So there's really only one decision left to make. And the question is, does this patient need antiplatelet therapy? And so maybe stress testing could help you here. But I think not. I'll tell you, I trained first as a family doctor, so I did this a lot. There will definitely be patients who are so high risk that I would suggest aspirin no matter what the stress test said. And there will be patients who are so low risk that I would never suggest aspirin. But there could be a gray area in the middle, a small number of patients where you're not sure. So maybe the stress test could help you decide if they need antiplatelet management. But we have to remember that the stress test is horribly inaccurate. Even if you're using a nuclear stress test, it's only moderately accurate. So I don't think it's good enough to help us make this decision.
Summary.
We are doctors, and sometimes we need to make big decisions. Rather than relying on an inaccurate test, I think the better approach is just to decide, do I really think this patient's pain was from angina? If yes, the patient probably warrants aspirin. If no, then don't treat. And of course, we should be involving our patients in making that decision. Either way, this kind of complex, lifelong decision is probably better done in a primary care setting with a doctor who really knows the patient. But I understand in some places we are the best primary care available. The bottom line here, from an emergency department standpoint is that our patients after a negative chest pain workup are very low risk, and that stress testing does not change how we are going to manage these patients. And it's just a bad, inaccurate test. So I think it's pretty clear that stress testing has no role in emergency medicine. But I look forward to the controversy that that might create.
Justin Morgenstern.